hour and a half, and we'll get right with the program. So we do have a quorum for the record. We have three areas, two that are online at the present time, and a third that'll be coming online, and one off-net out of Seattle that'll be available. If Anchorage, Glenn Allen, and Kenai, I believe, is going to join us here pretty directly. I want to thank the committee members for showing up for this first meeting. The issue, obviously, that is before us is the utility restructuring and competition and or competition a good idea for Alaska? That's going to ultimately prevail throughout whatever utility we happen to be looking at. And we'll try to channel each one of these, you know, by subject matter. Today, we're going to concentrate on sort of the transition between the interim committee that did a great deal of work and our ongoing work as this committee. And this will only apply to electric utilities at this time. We do expect that we'll have other utility issues that'll come before the committee here. In fact, we'll be floating this brief memorandum around to the speaker, which essentially asks that that it's essential that our committee have all issues relating to utility services and the Alaska Public Utilities Commission referred to it. And if you would take a look at that, and if you believe that this is something we ought to be dealing with, you'd sign it off, and then we'll transfer that on up to the speaker. We're going to start out this morning with an overview of, well, I guess Senator Lehman is not here yet, so he'll be joining us. I think he's got a kind of a window of opportunity here. So we're going to start out, I think, by the by asking the chairman of the interim committee, Representative Rochberg, to kind of give us an overview of what they did during the summer.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll go on to the witness chair. Mr. Chairman, are we entitled to gruel the witness?
Yes.
Gruel?
Gruel.
Oh, grill. I thought you said gruel. Yes, I think so.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. I view this, my testimony this morning and membership on this committee as the next step in a long journey that's been undertaken by the entire country, but as a step by the state of Alaska in confronting the issue of electric utility restructuring, whether or not Alaska should undertake to provide some form of electrical restructuring in Alaska. Mr. Chairman, I just would recommend to the committee that hopefully if everybody has an opportunity to read the report and the recommendations that the Joint Committee on Electrical Restructuring has provided the legislature. Under the guise of the joint resolution, the House Concurrent Resolution 34 last session, I, with Senator Sharp, chaired the Joint Interim Committee on this particular issue, at which time we had a number of committee hearings in Anchorage and in Fairbanks on this particular issue. It took substantial testimonies from people of interest in electrical restructuring, particularly the utilities and other members of the public, which had an interest. We did find one thing, however, Mr. Chairman, it's something I want to bring to the committee's attention, that we as the committee felt that we did not feel comfortable with the amount of public input into the committee and the hearing process that we held, in spite of what I believe were best efforts on the part of myself and my co-chair and other members of the committee to bring the public attention level up. So I think it's a matter of education and informing the public about this issue. It's kind of a, I consider it complex and difficult to understand and put your arms around. And for the average citizen, it's something that they really don't believe will affect their lives, when in fact, Mr. Chairman, This issue, if we choose to implement it in some form in a state, will affect everybody's lives on a daily basis. Based on the delivery of power by the electric service providers in this state to those people, and whenever they write a check every month. Presumably one of the goals of electric restructuring is to lower the cost and make a more efficient delivery of electric power to individual consumers. And if we cannot reach that particular goal, then we should put the issue aside. And I would say, Mr. Chairman, that if one looks at the recommendations of the committee, as we were charged to recommend to the 21st legislature, and as I indicated, this committee, I think, represents in large part the 21st legislature. If I would take a moment to review those recommendations, Mr. Chairman. The first recommendation is that the committee believe that this issue should be taken up, discussed, and raise the issue within the state and confront it and make a decision about whether or not to go forward with it. Additionally, Mr. Chairman, as the testimony this morning will indicate, there was a decision on the part of the joint committee to enter in conjunction with the Alaska Public Utility Commission a large study on this particular issue as it relates to Alaska. And part of the study specifications indicate that that we'd be taking up the issue of a pilot program, and the time frame for that study requests a target date of delivery of March 1st, 1999, an interim report on the issue of a pilot program. That was done, Mr. Chairman, to allow the legislature and this committee to take up the issue of a pilot program and the potential of implementing some form of restructuring in the state of Alaska during this session. Any further testimony will indicate that the final recommendations of that study are due, I believe, on June 30th of this year. So the second recommendation of the joint committee was for the legislature to take up and consider any legislation that may be necessary to implement a pilot program. Mr. Chairman, there was not unanimity on the committee membership about whether Alaska should wholeheartedly go out and embrace electrical utility restructuring. But I think it's fair to say that the members that participated in the committee on an ongoing basis all unanimously agreed that this issue of a potential pilot study in the Rail Belt area with a limited area of population would be the method in which we should look at this issue in terms of almost an experiment, if you will, to see if this can be applied in Alaska without jeopardizing the state or the consumers of the state on a broad statewide basis in endeavoring to implement this issue. In other words, let's try it out on a pilot basis to see and rely, and it's very important, the design of that pilot program be constructed in such a manner that we can get verifiable information that this committee and the legislature can look at and rely upon to see if we need to go further. So that's a major recommendation of the committee to the 21st legislature. And then additionally, Mr. Chairman, we recommended that the study results help determine whether there's any necessity of any statutory changes in the existing statutes as it relate to electrical services and electric utilities in the state, whether we need to take that up. So if one takes on first blush the recommendations of the committee, it doesn't look like a lot. But what the committee needs to understand is that the substantial testimony in review and trying to bring together any unanimous decision on this issue is a very difficult thing. Because we have in this state a lot of unique circumstances. And I think that if the committee looks at the findings and conclusions section, which is just prior to the recommendations, it becomes a little more evident about some of the issues that the committee confronted. I think what's one thing that we realized from the testimony is that Alaska is very unique as compared to the our contiguous 48 state members, although we do share in common certain things with the state of Hawaii because of their isolation. The most predominant thing is the fact that we're not on the national electric grid, which is very common for the South 48 state. And, Mr. Chairman, as pointed out in the report, federal legislation mandating the wholesale generation and sale competitively of power throughout the lower 48 has been implemented. So this is called wholesale wheeling of power and has changed the nature of power generation and its transmission in the lower 48 states on this electrical grid. In Alaska, you know, we are limited to one area of the rail belt that is have an interconnected type system. And you'll find, I think, in the testimony of various folks in the business that they don't call it a grid. They not sure they even call it an intertie system. They call it interconnected transmission system. And like any area, especially if there's a certain vernacular and nomenclature that goes with it. So I mentioned to the committee to be careful of that. Additionally, Mr. Chairman, Alaska clearly, and it seems obvious, but we have extreme climatic conditions. And from the latest reports from my home in Anchorage, it's cold up there. And and the importance of that is that it brings into play the issue of reliability and actually survival and life safety when it comes to the delivery of electrical power and services to the individual consumer. It's an important thing. We're not too worried about the loss of air conditioning systems here. We are concerned about the loss of heating and power that could and certainly would focus on the survivability of individuals in this state. Another thing is we have a vast number, a very numerous number of non-connected communities that have their own standalone generation systems in the main that are powered by diesel generators, and they're not interconnected and have to provide their own power at very high rates. The overwhelming majority, I believe the figure is approximately 92% of the utilities in the state of Alaska are publicly owned as opposed to investor-owned utilities, which is almost the exact opposite in the lower 48. Where most of the utility companies are investor-owned private companies. Actually, it's ironic enough, in the city of Juneau here, we have a privately owned, it's the largest privately owned power provider in the state. Another thing up here is there's a substantial amount of government investment, particularly in a part of the state of Alaska, in our power generation and transmission systems, the interties, such things as the Four Dam Pool, the Bradley Lake Project, and other projects that generate power in the state. We have the new Healy coal plant coming online with substantial federal and state monies. All these major infrastructure investments, I think, are unique because of the high level of state money in them. So the committee needs to keep that in mind. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure it would be appropriate for me to go through the whole study line by line and in various areas. I think you can basically get a good deal of this from the other members of the public that are going to testify here. I'd point out a few things, though, that I think the committee should be aware of. That I've been on, like a bloodhound, on this subject for the past couple of years, and sniffing and following up and trying to educate myself. I have a good deal to learn about this particular issue. I view my work and the work of the Interim Committee as introductory and a necessary step in investigating and finding out about it. But a few things I think are clear. One thing, and it depends on how you characterize it, that I found in the last 2 years is that at the beginning of my investigations, there wasn't, among the power providers, and particularly the rural power providers in the state, there was a great deal of skepticism whether or not any type of electric restructuring could be applicable in those areas, and therefore, I think it influenced some of their thinking as it related to the rail belt areas or their fear. For example, if there is we establish some form of dereg in, say, the Anchorage area, that might creep out and so forth in other areas and get into the problems that come about in terms of cost shifting. There's a great concern that this is a zero-sum game. In other words, if you are going to be providing cheaper power in a particular locale, that if you have a deregulated environment, that the bigger users will be cherry-picked off by the suppliers and therefore shift those costs from the embedded costs, is what's called, or the stranded costs, what's called, in the investment of the existing utility with a competing utility, and have the consumer have to bear the burden of amortizing and paying for those costs. So if you, in fact, you do have a zero-sum game, it's just a shifting of costs from one consumer to the other. That's, I think, one of the biggest fears in this thing that we all need to be aware of. And for this to actually work, that has to be avoided, because if it is a shifting of costs, then we have no real economic value. We haven't gained anything. You know, and that's the difficult thing. And I think to be aware of what's happened in the municipality of Anchorage area, there was an application for service by Chugach Electric Association to service a customer in the MLP or Municipal Light and Power area, and a docket was presented to the APUC. The APUC took this into consideration and basically rejected the notion that Chugach should have the right to service from their exclusive certified service area into another certified service area, and for a number of reasons. Additionally, there's a docket before the APUC by the Aurora Power Company. Aurora Power currently sells gas on a competitive basis in the Anchorage area. They're known as a reseller. Now, Aurora Power's docket request before the commission is to provide resale services of electrical energy in the Anchorage area on a pilot program basis, Mr. Chairman. What they wish to do is obviously enter the marketplace there and compete with the existing utilities. And for the committee's information, there are three electric power providers in the municipality of Anchorage boundary. Each has an exclusive service area. There is Chugach Electric, which is predominantly residential customers. There's the Municipal Light and Power, which has the downtown area and a vast majority of the larger commercial customers in the city. Then we have Matanuska Electric Association, which services the Eagle River, Peters Creek area in the north portion of Anchorage, all within the boundaries. So we do have, then all three of those particular providers are publicly owned companies. And so Aurora Power wishes to come in and compete with those particular companies. So the desire of a reseller to come into the market, and incidentally, as I mentioned, Aurora is already selling gas in the Anchorage market on a competitive basis. is one issue along with another thing, it's technology. I believe it's the term of art is distributed generative technology. A strange term, but what it means in large part is that there's new technologies available to the public or are coming more available. For example, for the establishment of on-site electrical generation. For example, if you had a what's called a pad for commercial development, let's say a McDonald's or restaurant location, right now it is feasible if there's a primary energy source such as natural gas to install a generator right on the site to generate your own electricity. And under federal requirements of the PUPA legislation, if you have a large enough generator, even the local utility is mandated to take that power if you have surplus power.
Excuse me, is that federal law?
Yes, that is federal law, right.
PUPA stands for?
PURPA, excuse me. Right. PUPA. Yeah, thank you.
Joe, PURPA stands for?
Right. Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act of 1978. Right. PURPA, right. At any rate, the idea that, and then there's other things, such as, one thing that's always caught my attention is, I think there's a potentiality in a few years that an individual consumer in the United States will actually be able to buy power on a credit card type device and plug it in their refrigerator. In other words, you can buy 6 months worth of power and just snap it in your refrigerator. So, you know,
like the telephone cards?
Right, you know, in a way, but I mean, they'll carry the code and the ability to do that. Other things such as solar power, wind power, geothermal, even hydro, small hydro, a lot of alternate sources, as well as the cogeneration or independent sources of power growing in the United States, usually in the South 48. We have some cogeneration, for example, in the refineries and some of our other activities in the state now, but that we have less, so we do not have the amount of independent power sources that the lower 48 have. So, I'd call the commission's attention, also to the fact that you need to separate these issues into basically three realms. It's generation, transmission, and local distribution. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to bring to the committee's attention that just in January of this year, the state of New Jersey adopted a new statutory form of electric utility deregulation. But in doing so, they maintained a regulated environment over the distribution lines, which is the local transmission lines. I believe, Mr. Chairman, if I'm not mistaken, that was based on the desire of their Public Utility Commission to establish and set the rates of the distribution lines for the competing power companies, and particularly as related to the embedded or stranded costs. So this is a method: if the PUC can set the tariff or the rate, that allows any so-called stranded cost to be recaptured to a degree by the utility company that installed those distribution lines. But nevertheless, with a deregulated environment, it allows the competing utility to come in and use those distribution lines to sell the competing power on a retail basis. And that's what we're talking about here, is retail as opposed to wholesale, wheeling, or competition. And I'm wondering a little bit, Mr. Chairman, but forgive me, the one thing the committee did work with is congressional delegation, and particularly Senator Frank Murkowski's office. Senator Murkowski is chairman of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee of the United States Senate, is charged with jurisdiction of this particular issue. He has had it in his committee for several years. There have been a number of bills introduced at the federal level. But But our discussions with the senator and his staff are that it is his desire to, in the main, to leave the adoption of this issue to the various states of the Union. So I think he has been very cautious in his approach to the issue and taken his time to see what is happening throughout the country prior to taking up the issue. But I think it's perhaps almost coming to the point where he may be able to, or must take it up. But I truly believe that any bill that moves from this committee will maintain the flexibility of the individual states to adopt programs to fit their individual circumstances. And certainly each state vary with a number of competitors and utilities available. And I think the vast majority of folks in this country agree with that. I think he's been sensitive to what we do up here. So his office and his staff is paying attention to the deliberations of certainly the inner committee and will of this committee that you're on. Well, Mr. Chairman, I could probably go on for an hour and a half. I would, I'm probably missing some things here. I think that the main thing, Mr. Chairman, is I'll be happy to be, I'm very pleased to be able to serve on this committee and bring my knowledge and minor expertise on this issue to the committee. And I did take note that we have provided to the committee the record of the interim committee, which was in two volumes, and I want to compliment Mr. Wilcox that he even grew to three volumes. Right.
You amassed an awful lot of information.
Right. We did, and I think that that'll be one of our duties. I'll try to assist you in directing the committee members to portions of that. It may be almost an impossibility, particularly during session, to undertake to read that thing, but I think there's certainly areas and portions of it that we can point out to the committee members that are not necessarily duplicative of other testimony that we will hear. But, and Mr. Chairman, there's a few things that I'd like to bring to the committee's attention, what the committee, the interim committee did not do, and areas I think that the committee should take up. These include excuse me if I could take this.
Need something here. For the record, Representative Davies has landed. Welcome.
A couple of things, Mr. Chairman, that I think are important and I haven't mentioned is the number one, when implementing these issues in various states, for example, California had a mandated discount of 10% in their billing when the legislature brought forward and on the pain of initiative, I believe, a mandate of a 10% reduction in their consumer rate in California. And this is called either a service credit or a shopping credit. This type of potential application in the state of Alaska was not taken up by the interim committee. So I believe it's something that we should be focused on here. Among other things that should be looked at. For example, in New Jersey, I just mentioned that they adopted a statute a few weeks ago. They have a shopping credit in the first year of a 5% discount to anybody who wants to reconnect to another service provider. And then within 3 years, it's mandated to go to 10%. Then after 4 years, it's market rate that will determine. So I believe what they intended to do, I'm not that familiar with the New Jersey situation, but I think it's the same thing that I referred to before. The mandated reduction in the rate to make sure that the goal of electrical restructuring to bring lower commodity cost to the consumer is actually effectuated. In California, they allowed the utilities to recapture their embedded or stranded cost in their rate or billing. So what happened in California, it's been very controversial, is that they had the mandated 10% reduction in rate, but right on the same billing, they had an offsetting recapture on a four-year amortization, if you will, of these stranded or embedded costs. So in some instances, some consumers claim they even actually paid more money. They were paying more after deregulation than they were before. So, but that particular line item on the bill is only supposed to last 4 years. So the literally billions of dollars in a major investment from nuclear plants at all that may be in the California utility situation, they only have a very limited period to recapture some of those. It's also interesting to note that in California, the concept of green power has been implemented and has been considered in some other states. That is to say, if a type of power generation, it's solar, wind, geothermal, things like that, that the consumer in the state of California, under their regulations, can pay more money than the other typical rate. In other words, they may elect to pay a higher rate because of the source of the generation. And so they pay a higher rate. That's called green power. I mentioned to the committee the retention of the distribution regulation. I think one of the another thing is that the committee did not take up exiting fees. In other words, if in fact some states require that if you change your service provider, you have to pay an exiting fee because you made a commitment, and this particularly comes into play for large commercial users. So it's something else the committee needs to look at. And
similar
I think,
to a bond,
pardon me?
Similar to a bond or something of that nature?
Well, actually, it's like a penalty clause. If you disconnect and go from one provider to another, in some states you actually have to pay a surcharge for it or a fee because of the, various reasons. But something that we didn't take up, I think, should be looked at. Also, I think one of the major things that the committee might want to consider is looking at the universal service funding. We don't, in the state of Alaska, have a universal service fund. We do, of course, have power cost equalization here, which is totally separate. But many states have low-income provisions where there's basically a tax on utility services that's redistributed through the utility companies and their public utility commissions to provide lower-income families discounts on power and to provide power to them. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude, get out of the way, but not before I do make a plug for a piece of legislation I will be introducing very shortly. It will be entitled the Electrical Consumers Bill of Rights, which has a litany of expectations and rights of consumers, but only if a form of deregulation is imposed on a portion or all of the state of Alaska. This particular bill will be contingent on whether we go forward with any deregulation. So it's something that I believe this committee should take up. I think it'll help guide you in your deliberations, and I'll be happy to answer any questions and be willing to work with the chairman on implementing the activities of the commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too. I know that Senator Lehman has on a limited time frame here and is also going to present to us. If I could, Representative Berkowitz, I'd like to let him come on up now. And then we can always put our good friend and colleague and member of this committee on the hot seat and ask questions at that time. Senator, thank you for showing up this morning. And
Mr. Chairman,
thank you for presenting to us this morning. You've got the floor.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, committee members, my understanding is that you wanted me to address the process of selection of the consultant, the contractor for this study, and where we are in that process right now, and somewhat of a progress report. Is that correct?
Yes.
As Co-Chairman Rokeberg mentioned some of the details, this is a complex issue. We wrestled with a number of them and found out that good people can disagree on conclusions drawn from much of this in electric utility restructuring. And so one of the things that we did agree on fairly early on as a committee is that additional fairly impartial technical study could be useful. And that is what the Alaska Public Utilities Commission had concluded. And so we decided as a legislative group to cooperate with the APUC in funding and managing and selecting a consultant to address certain issues that would go beyond what our committee could do. And we were looking for a consultant that had national, perhaps international, certainly state experience in electric utility restructuring, perhaps in other states, and you know, could apply that experience specifically to the state of Alaska, because I think, as we know, Alaska has some unique conditions to our state. We want to make sure that we can apply those conditions to our state. So we do that, look at specific issues, do an economic model, and then come up with a report that would evaluate and talk about the risks and the benefits of wholesale and retail competition in the state. Coupled with that, and it's something that perhaps some of you are aware of, I know some of you are, that my interest in a pilot study in at least a portion of Alaska that could produce results that would be beneficial for the rest of the study. In other words, you know, can we produce information on a limited basis that can be used in a model that will give us good information? And I have proposed in the past, as have others, that we do this, and there has been a proposal to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission recently by Aurora Power to do that in a portion of the Anchorage market. And so what we asked the consultant to do is look at that specific issue and that proposal and then give us feedback. Does that proposal make sense, or is there another one that makes sense that can give us results that perhaps we would or can use? And if we as a legislature decide to do something about it or even need to do something about it, we would have time this session to address it legislatively. And so one of the things we did was put a deadline in the study that it was originally, I believe, March 12th, but I asked, and the eventual consultant that was selected agreed to push that up to March 1st to give us time to review those results and decide if we would need to do anything legislatively to enable that to happen. The APUC issued the request for proposals in about the middle of November, and proposals were due the first part of December. There were 10 firms or combination of firms who responded with, for the most part, very high quality proposals. And those, I'm sure, if anybody ever wanted to see them, are available for review. I served on the selection committee, and asked myself many times when I was doing that, why? It's challenging. I've been on the other side many times, Mr. Chairman, as a consultant, and going through the selection is not an easy process. But we narrowed the 10 down to 3, interviewed those in the middle of December, and you know, we all recognize all the challenges of December and scheduling with people, but that was one of our, we had those constraints, and then were able to make a recommendation on the basis of the state has a certain selection process and certain credits for in-state experience and things like that. So they added the points up and made a recommendation to the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development for award, and that contract was awarded to the firms of CH2M Hill and Econergy International. These two firms, and I just had a note slip to me that one of them is online, or both are on, perhaps online, you'll be hearing from. But these two firms have experience in the area, met the standards that we had set, and also agreed to meet the deadlines and the budget constraints. They are currently doing a very similar project for Colorado. In fact, the schedule for that is almost concurrent with this one. I don't know when their deliverables are due, but I do know that their start date was just a little bit before ours, and so we were hoping that some of the benefits of, you know, knowledge gleaned from the Colorado study could apply to Alaska, and I'm sure the reverse is true as well. I might just note in closing that we participated in the drafting of the RFP to some extent, and I acknowledge Representative Davies provided some good assistance, as did Representative Dyson and myself, and then the full committee looked at it. We came up with a number of things that we thought should go into the request for proposal in terms of guidelines from the Alaska legislature. I have those documents. I did not make copies for you today. I can make copies of any of this that you'd like, try to summarize it. I don't want to give you any more detail than you want to handle, but I did want to give you enough to let you know that, you know, we went through a fairly extensive process so far. Oh, and I did have, and perhaps the consultant could give the information, but I did want to summarize a little bit of where they are. I met just before session started, the week before, I met with the consultant in Anchorage, and they at that time had just been signed to the contract and were getting started. They met with several people that week. They are planning, in the interim, they've been doing records research, and I'm sure pulling information from utility companies and doing all that type of thing. They're planning to be in Anchorage to meet with key stakeholders in the electric utility business February 9th through 11th, and will be in Juneau February 23rd through 25th to attend the ARECA conference. And that's a chance, if any of you or others would like to interact with them or meet them, you'd have a chance to do that. And they will be meeting with folks at that conference. And then on March 1st, they're scheduled to present at least the pilot study portion of the results, and then the rest of the report will be due. I think the draft is the end of March, if I remember correctly, but a little bit later in the year, and then we have a chance to react to that.
Thank you very much, Senator.
I have a few minutes before I have to go to finance.
Right. Vice Chair Cowdery.
Yeah, can you state in a short sentence or a single sentence what the consultant mandate is? You know, in other words, what tasks are they charged to perform? Mm-hmm.
The main goal is there's basically two goals. One is to provide an economic or engineering, or perhaps both, assessment of the risks and the rewards of wholesale and retail competition in Alaska. And then the second would be to provide comments
on Alaska broadly, or just in the Anchorage area?
In Alaska, the whole Alaska market area. Now, within that market area, they may conclude that competition should only be in, let's say, for example, the rail belt area, and not elsewhere. That may be one of their conclusions. You know, we didn't restrict them to anything, but we did offer that as a possibility. So, well, that may make sense. We just, you know, we don't want to limit you, but, you know, that's one of the options. The other is to provide comments on the pilot study, which probably would be limited to a portion of the Anchorage market. And that's, in broad terms, what their charge is. Within that, we've asked them to address retail customer choice, wholesale competition, and there are good people who disagree on whether that exists and to what extent that exists in Alaska today. Network integrity and what competition may mean to that, consumer protection and universal service, and then stranded costs, which is a very big issue. So those, you know, that basically is what the charge is.
Any other questions? committee. Representative Davies?
I'd just like to comment that I think that Senator Lehman and his staff and the staff of APUC should be congratulated for being able to put this contract on the street, do the evaluations, and get the contractor on board in a very short period of time, at a time of year when it's difficult to get things to happen. And I really appreciate the effort they've made doing that. And I think they did a thorough, first-class job. We've got some good consultants online, and I'm looking forward to hearing from them.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Thank you very much, Senator. And I presume at any rate that the other body has not decided to essentially conduct our kind of work on your side of the aisle over there. So I would hope at any rate that if you'd feel comfortable at any time in joining us over here and following this case, I know you have a personal and professional interest in it, and I think your background and certainly your work during the interim would be extremely valuable to us as we try to find out what we should be doing. So at any rate, I just want to make that offer to you, and we'll, if you'd like, we'll make certain that you're aware of our agenda as we go along. I just have staff to provide you that copy. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senator Lehman, and again, I want to thank you again for the efforts you put in. One of the things that I worried about with restructuring is the ability of Alaskan firms, Alaskan workers to maintain their jobs. And it just, when you're having discussions with this group, if you could ask them to take a look at that as well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. You know, in the overall analysis of what's good for Alaska, I think all of those things have to enter into it. There are a whole bunch of issues that enter into it. And I've attended conferences where we've had people from utility companies, people who are consultants themselves, all the people who are attorneys who've dealt with this whole issue of electric restructuring, and the results across the country have been mixed. And in many cases, it depends on how the restructuring is designed. And I'd certainly want to make sure that if we proceed with this, or at least for part of Alaska, that it's designed. Commission, I know that's the charge that they accept is to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Representative Davies, one of our goals this morning, again, was to try to make this transition from the interim committee to the sitting committee that's here, and you participated in, I believe, all of the activities during the interim here, and I thought it would be useful to committee members, myself particularly, I suppose, to ask you if you would mind giving us some of your observations and what you believe, at any rate, we ought to be focusing on, where we should go on the electrical utilities restructuring. You can either do it from there, or you can join us up at the head of the table.
I'd be happy to just do it from here, if you don't mind. I appreciate the opportunity just to make a few comments. I will try to not duplicate a lot of the things that have been said, and just give you a, kind of an overview from my perspective of where the joint committee went, and I think that would lead into where perhaps we ought to go. I haven't, in detail, given a lot of thought to the specific issues that we ought to deal with, but I'll try to give you an overview. I think that the Joint Committee did a pretty good job, as the chairman characterized it, of getting an introductory overview of the topic. It's a very wide-ranging and technically complex, and also regulatory, in a regulatory sense, complex issue. And I think it's a kind of a matter of definition when we say restructuring. Some people translate that into deregulation, and I think it's important to realize that it's not simply deregulation. That, in a sense, you might think of it as restructuring the regulatory scheme, in a sense, because what you do is you provide for competition in a certain area, but in another area, that is the use of the grid, you require even more regulation, I believe, so that there are aspects of this that actually necessitate additional thought about regulation. We heard testimony from a wide variety of folks, and it appeared to me that from that testimony that the issue in Alaska is being largely driven by a few large providers, mostly in the Anchorage area, and you know, the providers and the generators and the Aurora Power, the reseller market, and then also a few large consumers that feel like that they might benefit from some competition in the market. But I would note, and the committee did note, that we had almost zero interest from residential consumers, the small individual homeowner type. And I suspect that's for a variety of reasons. I don't think that one should necessarily draw the conclusion that there isn't a benefit to those folks from that, but as we all know, that until something's pretty specific, it doesn't hit the individual citizen out there too. You know, they've got other things to do, and until it's real important, they're not about to show up to a committee hearing. So I don't want to overinterpret that fact, but I think it is an important fact that there isn't a clamor out there from the average residential consumer for deregulation or restructuring. And that and also across the nation, I think that's been generally the case, and that in the places where the legislatures have moved the issue forward, it's been largely in areas where it's pretty clear that relative to their neighbors in adjoining states, their cost structure is obviously high or out of whack in some sense. The other thing I think that came across in listening to the testimony from around the nation and examples from around the nation is that there are no shining examples of success, in my view, around the country. In fact, in most instances, I think they are tales of caution for us. One of the interesting aspects of the FERC 888 regulation is that it excludes co-ops from its purview. And when you and of course it excludes Alaska entirely, but Alaska is exactly the opposite of the lower 48 in terms of the distribution of ownership of power generation, and that is that in the lower 48 only about 10% is generated by co-ops and municipally owned systems, whereas in Alaska about 90% of the power is generated by co-ops and municipally owned corporations. And I reiterate that those entities are excluded under the FERC 888 regulations, and there's some pretty good reasons for that. I mean, I think that philosophically one assumes that if you're publicly owned or co-op owned as a co-op, that the consumer already has their hand on the tiller, and if they want these changes, we will affect those changes. That's not necessarily the case in there. Representative Dyson, if he were here, would point out that just our looking at this issue has caused some of our co-ops to tighten their belt a little bit and take some other actions, which I agree did happen, was perhaps the most salutary effect of our deliberations today. The other main thing that I would point out, Alaska is substantially different than the rest of the lower 48 in a variety of ways. And one, of course, is we're small and we're remote. We're a relatively small number of consumers. We have a very small handful of providers, generators, and we are not interconnected to the rest of the lower 48 in terms of the ability of generators down there to provide power up here. Except in one case that the chairman mentioned, in the future there may be a much bigger market developing in distributed generation. And that's one place where I do think that this committee needs to keep their eye on that particular ball and look at the possible implications in the market here for the development of that. That could happen very quickly. And it may happen, ironically enough, it may happen in rural Alaska before it does in urban Alaska because of the cost structures. So I think we may want to look at statutory framework for that kind of commerce. But it's something out there on the horizon. It's not here right now. But it could develop quickly. We, and within Alaska, we don't have a grid. A grid implies a two-dimensional structure in terms of interconnectivity of the generating sources and the consumers. And we have one long linear tie line that people are distributed to in a star fashion in a variety of ways. But we don't have the redundancy that a grid normally would provide, and we don't have the ability to move power around that a grid would normally imply. And we have, again, I would emphasize, a relatively small handful of providers in a fairly modest market. So that, and a large, again, emphasize, large portion of the state not even connected to that one tie line, large areas with small individual, and that's, of course, a whole other issue that relates to the power cost equalization situation. The concerns that come up then within that context, I think, are the concerns of reliability. It's 40 below in my hometown last night. When it's that cold, the loss of power even for a few hours can be a life-threatening, certainly a property-threatening issue. It's extremely important that whatever we do, if anything, enhance reliability and not threaten it. We have to be very careful about that. The single biggest concern from an economic point of view, I think, and from the residential consumer's point of view, is the issue of cherry picking and the possibility, and also, of course, I guess, the possibility of development of a monopoly, an unregulated monopoly. The cherry picking issue, I think the chairman's gone over. It's pretty obvious what the problem is. You know, if you have a large consumer or you have large stranded costs and then you take, somehow you take, you shift the selling to another provider at lower cost, and you strand those other investment costs and distribute them among a smaller rate-paying base, obviously their price is going to go up. And that's unless you do something extraordinary. So those are very real concerns. Those, I think, are probably the chief concerns among many of the smaller providers around the state. And then I think generally, of course, we must be concerned when we have a situation like we do that's fairly small, that it would be relatively, it's not hard to imagine that a single provider could essentially buy up the whole market. And then we'd be in the situation of having an unregulated monopoly in terms of the selling of the power. Certainly the distribution would still be regulated, and it wouldn't be totally unregulated. But in terms of the price competition and those kinds of things, I think it's not hard to imagine that if one entity were to achieve essentially a very dominant position, that they would be in the position to drive price up in a way that would not benefit the residential consumer, and that's one of our chief concerns. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to leave with one last comment on the pilot project. I conditionally support that project, but I underline the word conditionally. And the condition is that I think the pilot should go forward only after we are assured that there's a good design for the pilot, that it makes sense for the consumers now, and that it will generate information that's useful to us in this context. If either one of those conditions aren't satisfied, then I'm not in support of the pilot. In other words, we need to have the information. I hope, and basically, I think it's right now, it's in the ball is in the court of the APUC. There is a docket before them from Aurora Power. They may be, Chairman and I have had some discussions about this, and I don't really know the answer to this, but they may be waiting to see what we're going to do. Certainly, if I were them, I'd wait to see what the study came up with by March 1. But I think we should be looking very carefully at what the study does come up with, and I think I would urge that the committee adopt this sort of conditional view of that, and that is that we need to see what the study says before we blindly jump on board a bandwagon that supports the pilot project. So having that sort of an overview from one member's of the task force point of view, and I appreciate the opportunity to present it.
Thank you, Representative Davies. Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned that the recent restructuring, federal restructuring laws that were changed. Is that in the last 2 or 3 years? Was that when it? Or are you aware?
About 10 years ago, I think.
Where are they can cross?
The last one was the wholesale wheeling.
Yep.
That was. What was the wholesale wheeling? But 92. That's right.
Yeah.
92 was for gate.
Yeah. So my question was, I thought it was fairly recent, and where I know California had high costs, and they were. Some of the northwestern states, I thought, were getting into that market and everything. So I don't know if we've even had time for a true evaluation of the service quality in that short time. Maybe we have, but it's just more of a comment that without saying it's good or bad, I think it's a fairly short time to evaluate if that's beneficial to the consumers.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with that.
Representative Davies, for the record.
That it is a short time, and that there's a huge amount of activity going on around the lower 48, and my comments are that in the few instances where they, in California, there's two, Southern California and the Palm Springs area, where they've actually gone into the market and tried to implement the restructuring, and I would say that the consumers in both of those areas responded with a resounding yawn, that it just wasn't obviously in their individual pocketbooks' interest to participate. And I think the Palm Springs study didn't even get off the ground, or situation didn't even get off the ground for that reason, that they required a 25% participation rate by a certain date. They only got 8%. And so that the few examples, and I agree with you, there are only a few at this point where they've really attempted this in a full-scale way. So far, I think that you couldn't characterize them as a success. And so that's why, I guess my bottom line, if anything, I would say that certainly this is an issue that we're going to need to look at. Certainly it's an issue that there may, in fact, be some need for some statutory work in Alaska. I agree with the chair of the task force on the need for some consumer protection legislation, and also especially some issues that deal with universal service. But I think that my general conclusion from the work that I've seen so far and the what's gone on Lower 48 is that we need to proceed with caution. And part of it's because of what you just observed, that so far there hasn't been a lot of time that's transpired since those efforts have begun in the Lower 48, and why should we be in a hurry? Why don't we learn from their, give us some time, the luxury to learn from their mistakes before we jump in up here?
One follow-up comment.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair.
You know, from your testimony and the testimony I heard, and I've heard this many other issues of that there was consumers or the residential people haven't participated in this as much as others have, and you know, it's my observation of what we do here in politics, and some of the public's reaction is, the public, they label us politicians, I guess, one side or the other side or this or that, but where the public is, they're at Cars, they're at the Eagle Hardware, they're at the bank, they're trying to go to work or start the car and everything, and they're not really interested in a lot of the stuff that we do, and sometimes the only time they get interested is when it hits their pocketbook, and sometimes that's too late. So I don't know any way that we can get them to participate more, but I would hope that somebody, we've got some good minds down here, that we can get them to participate.
Thank you. We were just telling little jokes here. Yes, Representative Berkowitz.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chair. And this is, I guess, for Representative Davies and Ropebrook, who served on the interim committee. We're talking a lot about restructuring and structure, and I would feel more comfortable being involved in this discussion if I had a better sense of what those terms mean. I have my own idea what they mean, but I think it would set some good parameters for us.
Let me suggest that the co-chair of that interim committee would give us some ideas on that, and then perhaps you could too, John.
Mr. Chairman?
And Representative Green?
Excuse me for interrupting, but we still have one more to testify, I think, and
yes.
It might be advisable to have
get
him testify
in.
Before we get into too much of this sort of thing. That question is paramount. I think that has to be discussed fully, but I'm afraid we'll get asunder. I've got a litany of questions I want to ask.
Good point.
I don't want to get into that until Eric has had
right.
his chance.
Would you mind, Representative, if we just kind of hold off until we...
Important, a very important issue.
Eric Gould, are you online, please?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Eric, we'd appreciate it if you could maybe hold your remarks down to, say, around 5 minutes, no more, and then if we have any questions, we can bring them out to you. And if you would, go ahead, please. If you could tell us, we know what your name is, if you could tell us what your affiliation is, and then give us your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Eric Gould. I'm the executive director of ERICA. We are the trade association that represents the electric utility industry in the state of Alaska. And in that regard, our utilities span the entire spectrum, all the way from Chugach Electric, which is the largest, including virtually all of the utilities in the Rail Belt area, all the way down to some of the smaller utilities in the state. AVEC, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, is one of our members. I believe that Nebelock is one of our members as well. So basically, the utilities that we represent, both cooperatives and municipals, and associate members being represented by the private sector, our utilities represent or generate about 95% or more of the 5 billion kilowatt hours that are generated throughout the state. So we touch almost every household in the state, with the exception of some of the smaller villages that themselves have their own individual utilities. Mr. Chairman, ERICA does represent both the cooperatives as well as the municipal utilities in the state. Basically, as has been mentioned earlier today, 90% of our generation comes from publicly owned or consumer-owned utilities. That is the kind of state we are, and that's totally different from the lower 48, where some 75 to 80% of all electrical providers are investor-owned utilities who have a totally different objective in what they're trying to accomplish. Basically, we're a profit-motivated society, and investor-owned utilities have a responsibility to put money on the bottom line. Consumer-owned utilities have the responsibility to provide power at the lowest possible rate. Be that as it may, I'm not here to advocate a position on restructuring today. I think that the electric utility industry truly wants to find out what comes out of this third-party study. And if there are benefits that can be brought to the state, we want to embrace those benefits and try and accrue them to our members. As a matter of fact, in our testimony before this committee, we even submitted to the interim committee, which, by the way, has done an outstanding job, a request for proposal and recommendation that they actually go out and have a third-party study done. The legislature, in concert with APUC, as endorsed by the electric utility industry, all three of us concurred that this study needs to be done, and we're very, very much in favor of it, and we very much would like to see a very credible, balanced assessment accomplished. We endorsed the study perhaps with one major caveat, and that caveat is the study itself. I think that Senator Davies put it best. If a pilot study can provide some useful information, then we need that information. But I think that it's a matter of when that information comes in. Our concern right now is that you put the cart before the horse, you've got the tail wagging the dog. Essentially, you've got the pilot study trying to establish and provide some information that perhaps will ultimately drive the conclusions of the study. We think it needs to be the other way around. The study needs to be done first, develop a template for the state, and then test that template with the pilot study. The pilot study itself is due as a deliverable the 1st of March. Here it is the 3rd of February. I can tell you that I have not been contacted by your consultant, CH2M Hill, nor to my knowledge in the utilities that I have contacted have they been contacted either. So I have to question whether or not they can craft a credible pilot study that is not going to ultimately skew the results of the ultimate feasibility study that you're conducting in this very short time frame. And frankly, the time frame for conducting the feasibility study itself, the first draft, is due the end of March. So there's not a lot of time, and I really question whether or not the pilot program makes a lot of sense in the way that it's crafted. Nobody's saying it shouldn't be done, but it should be done in a proper sequence. The sequence that is going forward with, we feel it's wrong. Mr. Chairman and committee members, a lot of issues have already been brought out on the table. I think that they've been well laid out. I would take exception with some of the things that have been said, but I'd like to do that at a later date. Mr. Chairman, I'd be very happy to come before your committee and give you perhaps a 20-minute even slideshow, if you would like, trying to give you the basic framework of the electric utility industry in the state so you understand where the transmission lines, who the customers are, and give you a basic framework from which to build and understand the issue. As a general rule, however, let me say that while I'm not here to advocate a position, I think that I can break the utilities' concerns perhaps into two areas. One area is rural. Frankly, we don't see how any template devised for the lower 48 and being conceived in the lower 48, where you have multiple transmission systems providers and large market areas, we don't see how any system can possibly work in rural Alaska. And I'd have to say that this is the one area where the utilities are pretty much in unanimous consent. We don't see how it's going to work in rural Alaska, and I think you should consider that. But the other area then gets back to the rail belt area, where we do have a semblance of a transmission system that reaches from Fairbanks down to Anchorage and then around the inlet down to Homer. Our concern primarily there is we would like to make sure that at least there's an equal playing field, or a level playing field, if you will. At the present time, there is I'll have to call it a weak transmission line system. Not only that, but you have two major providers of electricity and a third to the north. The two major providers, of course, being Chugach Electric and Anchorage Municipal Light and Power. Chugach, for instance, provides not only all of their own power, but most of their power to Matanuska Electric, Homer Electric, Seward, and actually quite a bit to Fairbanks as well. So if we do get into retail competition, we're concerned that the market presence of that one entity to be able to dictate prices at the wholesale level may have some impact at the retail level. That has to be considered, and perhaps there is a way to accomplish the equalization of that situation, but it does need to be carefully considered. We are concerned about a number of things. I think that much has been brought out. I will say that stranded debt is a major concern that we have. As a matter of fact, the municipality of Anchorage has established as their number one priority this year in the legislature, not a capital project as they always have in the past, but restructuring of the electric utility industry and to make sure that Anchorage does not get hurt by whatever comes out of restructuring. It's very important to the municipality of Anchorage, and I think that it highlights the importance of the issue in general. Mr. Chairman, I'll wrap up my testimony at this point in time, but the issues that were raised by everybody, I think, need to be considered by this group. We have a limited transmission line system. We have limited competition. We only have three real providers, really only two providers in the rail belt area alone. We are a wholly consumer-owned state. That is, 90% of our utilities are consumer-owned utilities. We are not not interconnected with the lower 48, and I can tell you in Palmer, when I got up this morning, it was 32 below, and if the line goes down between here and Anchorage, if there's spinning reserve up at Fairbanks, maybe we could get some electricity at Palmer, and there is a strike going on out there, as you well know. There is no groundswell from the retail side, and I can tell you the groundswell from the small industrial in Anchorage has only been there primarily because they've been urged out by the big providers. The cost of electricity in the Rail Belt is relatively equal. There's very little differential all the way from Fairbanks down to Homer. It's about 9.8 cents per kilowatt hour. And finally, there's the discussion of technology. You're not going to see the tremendous technological advances that you saw in the telecommunications industry, primarily because of the tremendous embedded cost associated with power generation in the first place. The telecommunications industry could always scrap a new technology in deference to a new one because the capital investment that they had in their previous technology was relatively low. We're talking in the electric utility industry nationwide, $200 billion. In Anchorage alone, we're talking a figure that approaches $1 billion. You don't just shut down generation in deference to new generation and forget the fact that you have debt service to pay. When you consider that in the state of Alaska, we have 20% of the nation's oil reserves, we have some of the most tremendous volumes of natural gas, we have, it's estimated, 60% of the nation's coal reserves, one-third of the nation's hydro reserves undeveloped. We have a tremendous wind regime, as everybody knows. We have a peat and biomass resource that's second to none of any state. I guess what I'm saying is we do have the resources. We do have the energy resources here that can be developed. It gets down to cost. Cost is what drives what's going to happen to the cost of electricity. And so don't get fooled into the argument that small dispersed generation is going to be the ultimate salvation of the electric utility industry, because we still have our prior debt that has to be repaid. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to rest my testimony, and I apologize if I've gone a little long.
Thank you very much, Eric, and we will be contacting you. I'm sure this committee would appreciate having, I know I would appreciate having your information and any kind of a visual description of what the industry and what the utilities look like in Alaska. It would be really helpful to us. We're going to be moving cautiously in this whole arrangement. We're not doing anything just for the hell of it, so to speak. We're trying to look at this thing as to what the public good is. And I might also add that we did have, throughout your testimony and throughout the early morning here, two members of the CH2M Hill who are working on this study, Tom Feel in Denver and Carl Rabago in Seattle, and neither one will be testifying here today because of the time, but both, I'm sure, have learned a great deal just by listening in, and I appreciate them doing that. With that, for the committee purposes, if there are any questions of Eric, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. As I mentioned, I've got a litany of questions I'd like to have discussed. Obviously, we don't have time. But I want to just back up what we just heard from Mr. Yold. When I was on the board of Chugach a dozen years or so ago, it was 7-something cents per kW. And that compared very favorably. It was in the lower third or lower fourth of the cost throughout the nation. And that's pretty unique, coming this far up. Now we're up about 2% a year since then, if it's 9-some cents now. I would dare say, and this could be verified by the next time we meet, that it's still in the lower half, or maybe below that, of the cost of generating and supplying electricity nationwide. That speaks pretty well for the people who generate, and because most of our generation is done on a co-op basis, which under the guise of a co-op is supposed to be the best, most reliable generation you can have, distribution at the lowest cost. if we are not already doing that, and I'm not saying we are or aren't, but that's a purview, I think, of APUC, rather than to come in and justify some outside entity, and this is just an overview. And like I say, I've got a lot of questions and things I'd like to say to the committee, and I'll make a memo so that we could maybe discuss that next time. But the knee-jerk reaction first strikes me. We've heard we're isolated. We have co-ops that generate by far the majority of the power in the state. Under their mandate from the federal government, it's got to be cheap as it can be, and it's overseen. Their costs have to be approved. If we're not efficient, we need to be, and that, again, is a purview of APUC. But to come in as a third party between the existing system and the consumer and say, I'm going to siphon off X amount of power at a reduced cost because now I'm a wholesale purchaser, and then redistribute that to some purchasers who want to buy it from me, the face of it doesn't make a lot of sense. The only thing that I could offer, since I'm not a generator, is that I can do this paperwork or some other way cheaper than the existing system. I don't know how much realistically that can be done to make any major commitment. And as we saw the horror story in California, and as Senator Lehman said, and I think Representative Davies has said, the experiences that have happened in the lower 48, some have been very good. It's kind of like gambling. If you're the first kid on the block, it really works well. But those who come later pay a terrible price. And what's happened in power generation, generally you amortize over 25 or more years. Now they're seeing stranded costs over 4. Well, it's no wonder then that those people that are left, their bills go way up because they now have an amortization fee as part of their bill that's way, way accelerated. So there are many, many, many pitfalls that we have to be very, very careful of this far away from any place else. And with God as my witness, I champion competition probably as much or more than anybody in the legislature. But there are places for it, and this just may not be. So as we observe what goes on in the lower 48, as Representative Davies said, look at it not only because it's a study that needs to, I mean, it's an operation that's ongoing, and let's see what happens, but let's see what happens under the conditions that are happening there, because they may not be applicable here. And that's, I think, the thing that we have to really be very careful of, that Alaska is so different from so many other places, that what may work in the energy-producing areas along the Mexican border, where this thing got spawned, and in California, where there's tremendous usage and there have been some misappropriations of costs, there is a really great story there for inducing competition. That certainly doesn't apply up here as far as the ability to pick around and pick your supplier. And the cherry-picking thing can't be overestimated, that there is that possibility. Why else would a third party want to come in if they're going to have to supply energy, large quantities, to a group of users that already have a break in the price at the expense of people like you and I? And our constituents, and that's the thing.
Transfer of costs.
That's right. We have to be very careful that we don't transfer disproportionately the amount of costs.
Well, thank you, Joe. You've echoed, I'm sure, a lot of the concerns that this committee will have in mind as we proceed through this minefield here. I would ask at this time if Representative Berkowitz, we kind of shut you off a little earlier there, but I'd be happy to take any questions or have you direct any questions if you'd like at this time.
Well, it's interesting to learn why they call him Representative Green, so.
He's chairman. Yes, Representative Ropert.
If I might try to answer Representative Berkowitz's query about what we mean by restructuring, it might be helpful. It's going to be in the report you'll find on page 4 that we endeavor to define that. But in a nutshell, basically, electrical utility restructuring, as opposed to deregulation, is the allowing in a jurisdiction competition to take place, but still maintaining a degree of oversight by the regulatory body.
whereas in full deregulation is the regulatory body steps away entirely and open market conditions take the forefront. The issue about restructuring and that term is that it's up to a particular jurisdiction to decide which portions of the regulations are to be set aside or modified to allow a more free market condition to occur. As I mentioned in my testimony, for example, in New Jersey, they've maintained the regulatory control over the tariff setting and distribution, but not other aspects of it. So hopefully that helps explain what is meant there. So there is a distinction between restructuring and deregulation.
Senator Berkowitz, follow up, please.
That means then that there is no competition now. I just want to be clear on the starting point.
There's exclusive service areas.
And then I have, it's probably more of a historical question. Prior to the formation of the PUC, was there competition and what happened then?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I can think back in my early days in the Anchorage area when we were making power in the, I think it's Sackett Harbor, right, John, in an old Liberty ship that was in the beach down in the port of Anchorage, and we had Inlet Power Company out on about, let's see, about 13th or 11th and Gamble Street pumping out power. So there was almost an unlimited type of competition in the marketplace until the Chugach Electric Association was developed and started delivering power.
But I might add, I think that's really a very good point, and it's some of the basic stuff that I believe we really need to understand here. In addition to, you know, a little bit of that history of when APUC came on board and, you know, how they've grown and what are some of the issues that they've dealt with, and because I believe that one element we're going to have to bring up is this APUC itself. Is it effective? Is it, you know, is it adequately streamlined? Does it have the right charge? Does it have the right resources? Is it adequately structured so that it, you know, serves the best purpose? And, you know, we'll ask them before our committee. We have to, because their sunset date is up and that bill will be coming to us first. And so I think that'll be one of the early things we do. We'll invite them down. We'll talk about that. Excuse me, Representative Green.
Just a comment to piggyback on what Representative Rookberg said, that in the early days of Anchorage, as well as the early days of electricity throughout the country, the REAs came in to areas that couldn't afford to have generation lines run out several miles to a farmer out here. So the Rural Electric Co-op was spawned in the federal government, and they controlled how things were run for years and years and years. When you're talking about the generation in Anchorage, 15th Street was about the edge of town, and so Chugach was developed then to take care of some of those bold homesteaders like John. And unfortunately, what happened, Anchorage grew south, and the majority of the people now live south, and so Chugach, which was only spawned to be a small rural co-op, now is the largest generator in the state. You did have, and I don't know whether you were here, but I know you guys remember, when there were competing lines in that mix area, and it was a disaster. So finally, I came in and drew a line and said, okay, all you guys on this side are Anchorage Metropolitan, and all you guys out here are Chugach, which helped a major problem in who was going to do what. Now, and so that there isn't any confusion, if we go to deregulation, it won't be that there'll be a whole bunch of new lines developed like that. So you won't have that mess. But it might be, Mr. Chairman, for whatever it's worth, a brief overview of what constitutes a co-op. What is their control, and why are they there? Who oversees and makes sure that they are operating at a minimum? Because that, like we said, in so many places, we're never going to get away from that in the outlying range. And we may not get, MEA is now talking about buying its the major supplier. Those are both co-ops, though. And that war is going to go on and on and on. While you then have a a publicly owned but municipality generating right in the middle. And everything else, except for Bradley Lake and some of the hydros, are just distribution. And one last thing, I'm not sure you're aware, or you may be, that there are three basic parts of a electrical system. There's the generation, the transmission, and the distribution. And in the lower 48, it's not uncommon to have large, huge generating and transmission companies who are actually owned, little pieces of it are owned by all the various distribution companies. So it's a completely different setup than we have up here, where our big ones are all three-tiered. They're power of generation, transmission, and distribution. So we really got a unique situation up here.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. Speaking of the early days, I know when I first got electricity, we were sort of at the end of the line, and when my neighbor's pump would go on, our lights would dim. So, you know, it was a challenge in them early days, but as Representative Green said, the co-op started and everything, it's been improved and to where our system is now. However, just as a comment, you know, like it's been mentioned here before, all these co-ops or all these electrical, or majority of them are publicly owned, and it really gives me heartburn when the public owns the utilities, and then these utilities using publicly owned or spending to sue each other. I mean, it just don't quite make sense, you know. And they spend a lot of money. Of course, the lawyers probably make a lot of money on this too. But anyway, I know there's petitions going around all over my town trying to get involved. I've always avoided those, so it's just more of a comment than anything.
Thank you. I'm going to take one last question or comment by Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's just a couple items I thought might be in form of wrapping up.
Sure,
one of my
that.
Comments to the committee is to alert the committee a couple things. Number one, rates have actually been decreased in Alaska in anticipation of electrical restructuring competition. Both Tugetch Electric and Madison Electric have made accommodations or made rate reductions in consideration of any future activity in this regard, just for your information. Additionally, there was a power pool and dispatch study commissioned and delivered by the APUC. Power pooling economic dispatch is a concept of what is the cheapest generated power, and that should be dispatched first versus the more expensive power. So there has been a study, and the results of that were rather disappointing, and the committee found that. We had testimony on that. But you should be aware of that. Additionally, I appreciate the comments that Representative Davies made about the monopoly situation. I recall in the Labor and Commerce Committee in the last several years, we were considering deregulating the refuse or garbage business in this state. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, all of a sudden we woke up one day and all the garbage companies in the state were owned by the same company, Waste Management. Therefore, ergo, we had almost an automatic overnight monopoly situation, so we backed away from considering any kind of deregulation system. And we have a situation with the Chugach situation in terms of their generation and their power of generation that we could find ourselves in a situation like that. So we need to be very careful of that. One comment, I know I'll take exception to what the comments were made earlier about waiting to learn what is happening outside. I want to draw a distinction here, and I think it's important for the committee to consider this. Alaska is so unique in terms of its whole electrical generation distribution system that there is no template for outside. I mean, we are so unique up here that we really have to design a system to fit our circumstances. We can certainly learn from the lessons. There's no question about that, and I agree with that. But we have to bear in mind the uniqueness up here. There's nothing that replicates Alaska in the South 48. So
And there has been some successes, Ms. Bentley. And, Mr. Chairman, we have been approved by the speaker to receive a national newsletter that will update us every 2 months, is it? The LEAP letter that's put out by Mr. Spratley, who was at the CSG West Conference in Anchorage this last year. And so we will have the ability for the committee to have access to the national net website and publication on this issue. And in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important that the members of the committee look at the exhibits are in the report, and I'd refer them to the April 30, 1997 letter from the Attorney General that was written at my and Representative Sanders' request. Yeah, which is an attachment to your report. What that does is explain to you the statutory situation here in the state as it relates to exclusivity and certificates of service. And it speaks to the issue which the committee wrestled with, and this committee will have to wrestle with, as to whether or not there's a need for any statutory changes in the state. There are some people in the Interim Committee that felt there was the existing statutory framework was such that we didn't need to do anything. Just let the APUC do it. There's other members of the committee that felt that we need to change our statute, and additionally, we need to broaden the scope and give more policy